Welcome to the Taming Tribulation Podcast. I am your host, Wyatt Hammond.
And I'm your co-host, Jeremy Crossley.
In Season 2, we are using biblical stories about trials and tribulations that characters have gone through, how they confronted them and overcame their own personal obstacles, so they can become the people that God uses for His purpose. Not perfect people, but imperfect people being used to do His will.
Our intention with these stories is to pass on to the listener the understanding that God uses the hardest and most difficult moments in our lives to refine us into the people we were meant to be.
We hope that you can be encouraged to see where God can use your tribulations for His purpose. Hello and welcome to episode 5 of season 2 of Taming Tribulation. So in today's episode, we're talking about David and Bathsheba, and the general idea of the story is King David sees a woman, wants to sleep with her, gets her pregnant, and all of the consequences that come with him making these choices. So this is one of the darker sides of David's story. A lot of David's story is very heroic and admirable, but this part is not. So we're going to start in chapter 11 of 2 Samuel. In the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, "She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam and the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Then David sent messengers to get her. She came to him, and he slept with her. Now she was purifying herself from her monthly uncleanness. Then she went back home. The woman conceived and sent word to David, saying, "I am pregnant." So this is just the start of the story. We're only a couple sentences into it, and David's already taken another man's wife, got her pregnant, sent her back home. And that's a pretty disastrous move for anybody to make. So Jeremy, all we've learned of David so far, he is this humble guy of the youngest of the family, kills Goliath, humble enough not to kill Saul, humble enough to keep running, to understand God's going to take care of me, gets crowned king of Jerusalem. He already has all these blessings. And now we see this very human side of David, where he is on a roof, sees this woman, and decides he's going to do a despicable thing. So from everything we've learned so far, why do you think David made this choice?
Well, I mean, this is a really great example of just what it's like to please the flesh, right? And it's kind of interesting how this storyline goes from a man who is after God's own heart to, well, David was this king hierarchy and chosen by God and killed the giant. And then, bam, we see the human, like you said, the humanistic side of it. And it just took him a glance, right? Just a glance to get out of his nice, beautiful bed to look outside and see a woman bathing. And this is where the trouble happened, right? This is where the trouble started. And it's wild to see like how someone as loved by God and been made king can just go through a downfall, just like any one of us.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a great point to take from the start of this story, that, you know, it's very easy to think of ourselves as just regular everyday people that are Christians, that you think all the things that we do are very disappointing to God all the time, and every sin we commit is detrimental, and just how lowly we are, all that is true. But when you read these stories and you go, okay, so even somebody that had all of these direct connections with God, saw all these miracles happen over and over again, still had the level of weakness to make these horrible choices, right? And as we're going to see, it's not just this one, it's one after another after another. And so it is just a perfect example of being a human, what we're susceptible to, right? And that you can have all these experiences with God, but still be that open to making those horrible choices. So moving on to verse 6. So David sent this word to Joab, "Send me the Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent him to David. When Uriah came to him, David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. Then David said to Uriah, Go down to your house and wash your feet. So Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. But Uriah slept at the entrance of the palace with all his master's servants and did not go down to the house. David was told, Uriah did not go home. So he asked Uriah, haven't you just come from a military campaign? Why didn't you go home? Uriah said to David, the ark in Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my commander Joab and my lord's men are camped in the open country. How could I go to my house to eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing. Then David said to him, stay here one more day, and tomorrow I will send you back. So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. At David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servants and did not go home. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it out with Uriah. In it, he wrote, put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest. Then withdraw from him so he will be struck down and die. So this part of the story, Jeremy, only emphasizes what a terrible thing David's done, because he calls the man whose wife he cheated with back to the palace out of war and says, go home to sleep with your wife, obviously to cover up that act. If Uriah goes home and sleeps with his wife, and everyone will think that now he's the one that got her pregnant. But Uriah is so honorable that he refuses to go and eat and drink and have sex with his wife while his whole army is still fighting. So he goes and sleeps at the front gate with all the servants. And it might be a little bit easier to not accept what David did, but just to this story might go down a little bit smoother if Uriah was a terrible person, right? If it was like, yeah, Uriah did go home and ate and drank and slept with his wife and beat her, and you'd be like, okay, well, that's not so bad. But Uriah in this story is the hero, right? He's the one that does exactly what he's supposed to do, listens to the king, listens to God, is humble when he's sent back to the front lines, is a hero there too. And so,
well, he's admirable for sure. Uriah is, I mean, you got to remember, wherever they went to war, they brought the Ten Commandments with them, right? And he's just like, straight up, he's like, hey, like, all of that is intense, right? And I'm not gonna, who am I to go home and sleep with my wife? Like, it's not even the fact that he's just, if he would be a bad person, I just think he's just so loyal to his men and to his duty and to what he wanted. He's like, I'm not going to do that while my men's fighting the fiercest battle, which you've got to respect on a big level, because he probably was going back there only because the king's like, bring him back. And you got to kind of look at what David's trying to do in this situation. David's like, he knows he messed up. And instead of like telling someone, I mean, we can always relate this to ourselves. Instead of like telling someone, hey, like I messed up really bad. And you know, you always have that intimidation of not telling someone, always trying to hide it, right? And this is what David was trying to do. He was just trying to hide it. And he, you know, goes to be wife. No, not going to happen. Can't do it. And then he's like, all right, we'll give you one more shot. And then he tries getting him drunk. And as everyone knows, you know, well, not everybody, but a lot of people know, like when you're drunk, you do things that you know, a lot easier that you'll regret. I'm sure a lot of people have that type of story, but
yeah, anybody who's ever drank alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And he still just goes back to his mat and lays down. And now obviously David, continuously trying to cover up his sin, then tells, you know, his general, I would imagine, that, hey, like, go put him in the fiercest part of the battle and kill him. Like, he didn't want to do it. You know what I mean? Like he didn't want to cover up his sin. So he did. And it just made it even worse, right? It just piled sin on top of sin. Now he's responsible for murder on top of adultery and immorality.
Well, and just the thought that, okay, so you have this plan for your enemy who you're trying to trick. And so you say, okay, go sleep with your wife. Your first plan doesn't work. So you get him drunk. He still doesn't go sleep with his wife. Okay, so my plan isn't going well. Obviously, he's not sleeping with his wife. So if I don't think of something else, I'm going to get caught. And so instead of just accepting the first loss, accepting the second loss, and and eventually just being like, okay, I screwed up and I need to repent from this. He instead of that decides, okay, these plans didn't go well. Now I'm going to kill him. Right. Like it just brings it to the furthest extreme that you could. Like, so what's the worst thing I could do in this situation? Okay. That's what I'll do. Right. So that's who we're dealing with now in this part of the story. We're learning some very dark parts of David's personality, or it's no longer the David and Goliath hero that we're talking about. We're now yeah. talking about David, the murderer, the monster, the schemer. And it's important to recognize that we're all those things, right?
Yeah.
We're all David fighting Goliath, and we're all David sleeping with Bathsheba and killing Uriah, right? We're these stories are meant to tell us exactly that what the strongest and most heroic are capable of are also capable of some of the darkest things you could do, and David's one of those people. So
it's not even just that too, Wyatt. It's like it's much more deeper than that. It's like this is the guy that was chosen by God to be the next anointed king, and even after all the things David went through with seeing Saul, the things he went through, like he tried murdering David multiple times, and you know, he was so humble and he was just like, I'm not going to do it. Like he was in such control during that moment. But I can imagine it was as soon as he became king, like David only was successful at doing this because he was king, because he had power, because right. he had knowledge.
If there was anybody above him, he couldn't have pulled it off.
No, he wouldn't have been able to. And I think that's also something to point out in this too. When we get to a level in society where we see ourselves as the boss, top dog type of thing, we kind of lose our humility and we kind of lose our humanity. And in the context of like a spiritual humanity, you know, it's like when you start getting up to that level of importance and power, we start forgetting who's actually in power. And I think this is one of the things that David had a downfall with, and any one of us could have a downfall with. Once we get to a certain level in our life, we can be so complacent and so content that not only understand like what we see within what's going on, but what we also worry about what others see about us. Like imagine if everyone found out, oh, the king slept with, you know, Uriah's wife. Like, how dare he? What a sinner. He's not an admiral anointed, you know, king of God. You know, he was probably going through all this in his own head too.
Yeah.
I can't let the people know that I slept with my general's wife. You know, I can't let the people know that that's my child. I can't let the people know, because he had a wife too, you know? And it's like, so it's more than just like, oh, I'm trying to hide my sin. It's like, I'm trying to hide everything. Yeah. And I mean, we'll continue reading, but you can't hide from God. You know, it's always out in the open. And it's just wild to see how dark someone will go. And I think this is something we really need to point on, is like how dark you're willing to go to try to hide your sin.
Yeah.
Try to hide what you know is wrong. And this is the man. This is David, King David, who was like
God's chosen guy.
Yep, God's chosen guy. The descendant of the same bloodline that Jesus is going to be a part of. And he's like, he's still human and he's still messed up. And he still fell over and over again. And look what it caused him to do, because he was so indulged in a glance at a woman. Mm-hmm. A glance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another good point you just made there, that it's like, it's not like anybody had to come and say, hey, you should do this. And like, you'll gain anything from this, right? It's not like this whole plan was about gaining wealth or power or influence or anything. It was literally just lust. Right. He just had this inclination and decided, I'm going to follow through with it. And everything that comes after, he doesn't even get anything from. Right. There's only punishment, only distress, only rebuke. And it's like, man, if that's not a story for sometimes how your sexual drive is not worth the outcome, that's this is the one to look to. Right.
Yeah. And we'll read as we read on, we'll see even the fruits of all the sin, like what it's going to actually create, right?
Yeah.
It's like it's burning the field more and more. And I just, this is why, in my opinion, David is like such a good person to talk about at first, because he's on the hilltop and then he's in the valley and then he slowly gets back up to the hilltop, but he has to put in the work to get back up there. And right now he's the one keeping himself in the valley. He's the one continuously digging his trench and he's his grave essentially. And it'll come to a point where he realizes like, I can't hide anymore. I'm every sin I'm trying to cover up. I'm sinning by covering up that sin.
And they're only getting worse and worse.
It's just getting worse and worse. He just, you know, now he's at murder. So
yeah. And what could possibly be come after that, right? You just committed the worst, the worst commandment you're not supposed to commit. And so okay, you're at rock bottom here, pal. What comes next?
Yeah.
So let's carry on in verse 14. In the morning, David read a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In it, he wrote, "Put Uriah out in the front where the fighting is fiercest. Then withdraw from him so he will be struck down and die." So while Joab had the city under siege, he put Uriah at a place where he knew the strongest defenders were. When the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, some of the men in David's army fell. Moreover, Uriah the Hittite died. Joab sent David a full account of the battle. He instructed the messenger, "When you have finished giving the king this account of the battle, the king's anger may flare up, and he may ask you, 'Why did you get so close to the city to fight? Didn't you know they would shoot arrows from the wall? Who killed Abimelech, son of Jerubbaal? Didn't a woman drop an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died in Thebes? Why did you get so close to the wall?' If he asks you this, then say to him, 'Moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead.'" The messenger set out, and when he arrived, he told David everything Joab had sent him to say. The messenger said to David, "The men overpowered us and came out against us in the open, but we drove them back to the entrance of the city gate. Then the archers shot arrows at your servants from the wall, and some of the king's men died. Moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead." David told the messenger, "Say this to Joab, 'Don't let this upset you. The sword devours one as well as another. Press the attack against the city and destroy it.' Say this to encourage Joab." When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. After the time of mourning was over, David had brought her to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. So David puts Uriah at the front of the battle and tells everyone else to back up. So Uriah's the only one there. I'm laughing because what a just despicable thing that is to do, right? Like it's so obviously at the limit of evil to be in charge of an army and thinking of ways for your own soldiers to be killed, right? Like you're now not even a horrible person, a horrible man, but a horrible king. You're sabotaging your own battles. So he does this. He's told Uriah's been killed, brings Bathsheba into his own house, makes her his wife. And we end it with, "But the thing that David has done displeased the Lord." I would assume the Lord is very displeased with these actions. So
it's the most amount of disrespect against God that you can possibly do against your king, against everything. Like he made you king,
right?
He made you see over all his people.
Yeah.
And you go and do this to cover up your sin.
Gave you power to have say over what your army does and who goes where and who does what, and gave you power to say, I want that woman, bring her here. I want that man killed, kill him, do this, do that. And then you only start doing using these things for your own lust and power.
Yeah.
And keeping your sin hidden. Like, and so now God's given you all this stuff and you're only using it to make your own self more sinful. Like,
Sounds like he's losing favor, don't he? Sounds like another Saul, don't it?
You know?
It's wild to see, and this is a trend. This isn't like it's just obvious to see what the story is saying in this. It's like God's essentially saying, like, you guys wanted a king, and both your kings right now, the first king you had, hey, look at him. He completely disobeyed everything God told him or Nathan told him, and it didn't go well, right? And then, okay, we'll get you a new king. And then a new king comes along and everyone's like, yeah, this is going to be a better one. He kills thousands and tens of thousands. And he killed a giant and he did this and he did that. And he's such a good looking guy. He does this and he does that. And it's like, but look.
It doesn't take long.
It doesn't take long.
Yeah. Then just one night on a roof and everything falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where it was just like that night on the roof, if you just had the faith to say, okay, obviously this is something I want to do. Obviously this is something that God doesn't want me to do. So I'm not going to do it. And like, can you imagine this? David's life just continues on the upward trajectory, right? Instead of this massive downfall. But that's what we all do, right? And we all have these moments where we get to make a choice, and we make one bad choice, and then we make two bad choices, and three, mm-hmm. and four, and it just continues on. And if we had just at number one or two stopped there, what a benefit that would be to us. But
no, I think it's even before that too. Like, why didn't David go to battle with his men? Because David, in this, before he was king, he was on the front lines, and he was literally with his men all the time, fighting every battle. And then the first battle he gets put into, he stays behind. It's kind of like asking a question of, like, I think maybe that was his first poor choice. Where were his brothers? Where were his men? His men were fighting while he was sitting behind. You know, it just doesn't seem like something a king would do. Saul went to all the battles, right? Saul was even like did his own thing, you know, with his son, and like that's how he died. But I think his first mistake was staying home while his men were doing what they wanted to do.
Wow, that's a great point. That he the only reason that he even had the opportunity to make that choice is because he was probably bored,
mm-hmm.
right? Sitting in the palace, nothing to do one evening, out on a balcony, and just that's boredom is the devil's playground, right? Yeah. So you're totally right, man. If he had decided I'm gonna be the king I should be and be there to see what's happening, then there's no opportunity for boredom, right? So that's a very insightful point. So we are stopping this episode at chapter 12 of 2 Samuel. Continuing next week, we're continuing on David's story of him and Bathsheba, and now the consequences that come from his actions. Thanks for listening to Taming Tribulation. Have a good week, everybody.